client ID metadata documents in Spring, SIMD instead of DCR. Client ID metadata documents replace dynamic client registration for MCP clients. How SIMD works in Spring, and what happened when Claude Code connected. What a client ID metadata document is, a client ID that is a URL. A client ID metadata document SIMD is a JSON file an OAuth2 client publishes at an HTTPS URL, and that URL is the client's client ID. The client never registers. It asserts an identity, and your authorization server fetches the document behind that URL to read it. Nothing gets written to your database because there is nothing to write. A month ago, I published the DCR proxy pattern, a Spring authorization server that adds dynamic client registration in front of an IDP that can't do it. That post ended on a promise. It called itself a DCR broker today with a deliberate SIMD seam and said of the SIMD path, none of that is wired yet. This post wires it. Same demo, same keycloak, same MCP server in a sibling repo you can run with one command. And the switch itself is one line. Code block omitted. One line to flip. Everything worth reading here is what that line forces you to build around it. The whole client identity is one small JSON file. Here is the demo client's entire identity, not an excerpt every field it has. Code block omitted. Look at the second line. The client ID is the URL this file is served from. The document points at itself, and that self-reference is doing all the work. An attacker can copy this document to a host they control, but the copy now sits at a different URL, so its client ID field no longer matches where it lives. Your server rejects it. Only whoever controls http://localhost/simdclient/clientjson can publish a valid document claiming to be that client. Control of the URL is the credential, and that one property is why everything downstream gets so small. Why SIMD exists? Your MCP server has to accept clients it has never met. Classic OAuth2 pre-registration assumes a human visits a portal, fills in a form, and gets a client ID and secret before any code runs. That works fine when you know every client in advance. An MCP server usually doesn't. Someone installs your server in an editor you've never heard of, and that editor needs an OAuth2 identity before it can ask for a token. DCR's answer was to let the client register itself at runtime. It works, and it costs you two things. A live registration endpoint that anyone can post to, and a database row per client instance. My June repo needed a whole proxy in front of Keycloak precisely because most enterprise ID PTKS won't expose that endpoint at all. The MCP revision of 2025-11-25, the change landed as SCP 991 made SIMD a should and dropped DCR to May. And the reasoning is operational rather than cryptographic. On a public server, every client that ever connects writes a row, including the ones that connect once and vanish. Each row is a credential-shaped object you now own and have to expire. There's no natural garbage collection, and the write endpoint itself is an abuse target. SIMD's answer is to skip the handshake and put identity where it's already published and already owned. On the vendor's own domain. The client already has an identity because a URL is an identity. Your server just has to be able to read. The client identity database is the web. DCR gives you a row you have to keep. SIMD gives you a URL you have to trust. Worth being blunt about when you don't need any of this, though. If you only ever talk to clients you control, pre-register them and move on. Neither mechanism earns its keep. SIMD starts paying the moment you're open to clients you don't control. What the authorization server does at authorized time. An MCP client sends /OAuth2/authorize. Client ID equals http://localhost/simd/client/client/json and your server takes over from there. Five steps, and the Java doc in the repo names all of them. 1. Detect. The client ID is URL-shaped, so the SIMD repository takes the request instead of the JDBC one. 2. Fetch. It gets the client ID metadata document from that exact URL. 3. Validate. The document's own client ID must equal the URL it came from. Redirect URIs must be present and valid, and a client secret is not allowed. 4. Convert. What comes back becomes a public PKCE registered client. 5. Cache. Kept for the TTL in the response's cache control. Max Sage or 5 minutes when the header says nothing. After that fifth step, the normal authorization code flow runs as if this client had been registered for years. Because as far as Spring Authorization Server is concerned, it now is a registered client like any other. It just happens to be one that will evaporate in 5 minutes, and its redirect URI is matched exactly against the list in the document that just arrived. The three kinds of auth people conflate here. This is where SIMD gets misread, so it's worth separating three questions that sound like one. Is the client authenticated? No, not at all. The document says token endpoint auth method. None, which makes this a public client with no secret. There's nothing to authenticate with, and that's deliberate. A client that ships to thousands of laptops can't hold a secret anyway. What carries the weight instead is PKCE, plus the exact match of the requests, redirect URI against the list in the fetch document. A hostile party can start a flow. They can't get the code delivered anywhere the real client's document doesn't already name. Is the user authenticated? Yes, and this half didn't change at all. The login federates upstream to Keycloak exactly as it did in the DCR repo. Code block omitted. One wrinkle worth knowing. The authorization server's own consent page never renders. MCP clients send scopeless authorization requests, and the library skips consent for those, so the only consent screen a user sees is Keycloak's. What may the token do? Whatever the user's roles allow, and nothing the client asked for. Scopes get stamped at mint time from the upstream realm roles. The comment on the fail-closed branch got sharper under SIMD. Code block omitted. That line is byte identical to the DCR repo. Only the reason changed. Under DCR, the client asked your server for scopes, and under SIMD, it writes its own metadata file and declares them. The threat got closer. The defense didn't have to move. Wiring it in Spring. The types exist, the auto-config doesn't. Before the wiring, the trap. Turning DCR off is one line, and it isn't the line you'd guess. SIMD true doesn't disable anything. Open the configurer's source, and the two flags are independent fields with opposite defaults. Code block omitted. DCR defaults to on. SIMD true flips a separate flag that advertises SIMD support and mounts the resolution path. It leaves the registration endpoint exactly where it was. The only off switch is dynamic client registration false, which is why that call sits in the opening snippet doing real work rather than stating the obvious. Grep the Java in this repo for dynamic client registration, and you get exactly one hit, the line switching it off. Past that, there's no boot-style auto-configuration for SIMD, yet MCP security hash 24 tracks that, so you wire three types by hand. Code block omitted. The delegating repository tries SIMD first, then falls back to JDBC for pre-registered clients. The demo ships none, so that table stays empty, which is the point. One thing that will confuse you if you go looking for the source. The import reads like core Spring Security. Code block omitted. It isn't. Unzip MCP authorization server 0.1.13. JAR and that class is inside it. The community project ships classes into Spring Security's own package namespace, which is a normal trick for reaching package private API and a confusing one to land on from the import statement. Search the Spring Security repo for that class and you'll find nothing. The bug that only shows up 5 minutes in. Here's the one I'd want someone to tell me about, because the failure lands nowhere near the cause. The library's find by ID only consults its cache. That cache holds a document for 5 minutes. Refresh tokens in this demo live 7 days. So a refresh token grant made 6 minutes after the original authorization asks for client the repository has already forgotten, gets null, and fails. Same for any restart while a persisted authorization is replayed. 3 lines fix it. Code block omitted. Nothing in the docs mentions this. It's the kind of thing you only meet by leaving a demo running past the coffee break. The SSRF risk. Your server now fetches a URL an attacker picked. Under DCR, your authorization server made no outbound calls to identify a client. Under SIMD, it dereferences a URL supplied by whoever is starting the flow, which is a textbook server-side request forgery vector. Point it at 169.254.169.254, and it reads your cloud metadata and point for you. The guard is one bean. Code block omitted. Boot 4.1 init address filter gets enforced inside the connection manager's DNS resolver, so it vets the addresses actually being connected to, redirect hops included. A refused host throws filtered host exception before any socket opens. The offline test drives the real production client construction rather than the filter in isolation, so it proves the wiring and not just the predicate. Code block omitted. What statelessness actually buys you? Stateless gets said a lot and cashed out rarely, so here it is in 4 concrete pieces. Each one visible in the running demo. Nothing accumulates. The OAuth2 registered client table in this repo is real, it's indexed, and it's permanently empty. That's the feature, and one query is the whole argument. Code block omitted. 10,000 clients cost exactly what one client costs, because the storage cost is zero either way. No pruning job for stale clients. No migration when a client's metadata changes, no capacity question. The tempting cleanup is to delete that schema entirely, and it was kept on purpose. Authorizations and consents still need JDBC persistence, so refresh tokens survive a restart, so the Liquibase changelog stays exactly as it was in the DCR repo. The registered client table just never fills up, which makes it the most legible proof of the whole thesis. The schema comment says it plainly. Code block omitted. One less write path exposed. No registration endpoint means no unauthenticated post that creates persistent records on your server. But not advertising an endpoint isn't the same as not having one, and it's worth being careful about how you prove the difference. Leaving registration endpoint out of the metadata only means well-behaved clients won't go looking for it. A 403 from post/OAuth2/register doesn't settle it either, tempting as that is. A registration endpoint that merely sits behind authentication would return 403 too. The 403 tells you the request was refused, not that the route is absent. What does settle it is the differential. Probe the path against a route you know doesn't exist and against one you know does. Table omitted. /OAuth2/register answers identically to a path that isn't there and nothing like a path that is. That's the claim worth making, and it's narrower than the one I reached for first. An earlier version of the repo's check task read that bare 403 as proof the route was never mapped, which is more than a 403 can carry. No onboarding step for the client vendor. Nobody has to run a registration call, store a returned client ID, or handle the case where it got lost. The vendor publishes one file and is done. Identity updates propagate on their own. When a client vendor adds a redirect URI, they edit their document, and your server picks it up on the next cache miss. Under DCR, that same change is either an RFC 7592 management call or a support ticket. The other side of stateless, revocation and someone else's uptime. Two costs come with that, and neither should be soft-pedaled. Revocation has no obvious lever. Under DCR, cutting off a client is a delete on a row. Under SIMD, there is no row. You can't revoke a client because you never granted it anything. All you can do is stop accepting its URL, which quietly makes your trust policy the revocation mechanism. The demo ships without one, and that turns out to be its largest gap. More on that below. You've taken a runtime dependency on a third party's host. This is the trade people miss. DCR state was a liability you owned. SIMD swaps it for an availability question you don't own. If the client vendor's document host is slow or down at the moment a user logs in, the login fails. Your fetch timeout, your cache TTL, and your behavior on a stale cache entry stop being tuning knobs and become availability decisions. The demo caches for 5 minutes because Engine X sends no cache control on client JSON, and the library defaults to 5 minutes when the header is absent. Table omitted. What changed between the two repos and what didn't? The two repos are the same demo with one mechanism swapped, so the diff is the evidence for everything above. The surprise is how little of it there is. The entire MCP server module is byte for byte identical between them. Every tool, every at pre-authorize, the RFC 9728 metadata, the ES256 validation, the audience check. So is the whole Keycloak setup. On the authorization server side, one config class was substantially rewritten OAuth 2 store configuration, one DSL line flipped, one guard bean and its test were added, and the rest of the changes are comments. The JWKS config, the token claims config, and the role mapper have zero changed lines. The scope mapper's only diff is the sharpened comment you read above. Swapping how clients identify themselves touched neither the resource server nor the IDP, which is the strongest case I can make that SIMD is a swap and not a rebuild. What it prints when it runs. One command builds both modules, starts the infrastructure, provisions the Keycloak realm, runs the discovery checks, and then drives the scope matrix live. Code block omitted. The checks confirm the shape of the server. SIMD advertised, no registration endpoint, ES 256, and the MCP server's 401 pointing at its protected resource metadata. Code block omitted. Then the headless end-to-end test authorizes with a URL where a registration call used to be, logs both users in through Keycloak, and calls the tools. Code block omitted. Alice's scopes come from her user realm role. Bob's admin role adds note, admin, and neither client asked for any of it. That's the demo working exactly as it did under DCR, with the client identity resolved from a URL instead of a database row. Which is fine, but it's my own client talking to my own server. The more interesting question is what happens when a client I didn't write shows up. Who hosts these documents in production? The vendor does, and you never do. Whoever ships the client publishes its document on their own domain, and your authorization server dereferences that URL at authorized time. You host nothing for clients you have never met, which is most of the operational appeal. The Nginx container in this repo exists only because the end-to-end test plays the client role locally, and something has to serve its file. Table omitted, which also means an outage on their host, is an outage on your login path. Claude code, the gap between a published document and a running client. Claude Code publishes a metadata document at https://claudeai/oauth/claudecodeclientmetadata. So I pointed the server at it, expecting the flow to just work. Instead, I got a 400, and the reason came down to a single hostname form. Everything stated here is as of 2026 to 07 to 25, with Claude Code 2.1.219. Both the callback template and the environment variables below can change in a patch release. The document declares its loopback callbacks without a port. Code block omitted. At runtime, Claude Code binds a random port and sends http://localhost:\random port/callback. That URI is not in the document, so a spec-strict server refuses it. Probing the authorize endpoint with Claude Code's real client ID and each candidate redirect URI in turn. Table omitted. Look at rows 2 and 4. An arbitrary port is fine on 127.0.0.1 and rejected on localhost, and that asymmetry is deliberate. RFC 8252 section 7.3 lets a native app use any port on a loopback redirect, but the rule is written for the IP literals 127.0.0.1 and 1. The name localhost gets the opposite treatment one section over. Section 8.3 recommends against it outright, because a name can be repointed by a host's file or by DNS, and a loopback address literal cannot. Spring Authorization Server implements exactly that distinction, so the server is right and the refusal is the security property working. Worth noticing what did not fail. The SIMD half was flawless throughout. The server fetched Anthropic's document through the SSR RefGuard, validated it, and accepted the identity every time. Only the shape of the redirect URI was ever in question. And there's a way through, which is the part I'd have wanted to know first. Claude Code reads MCP OAuth client metadata URL and MCP OAuth callback port, so you can point it at a document whose redirect URIs match what it actually sends, on a port you pin. //prettier-ignore*/code block omitted. With that document and a matching MCP OAuth callback port, the whole chain runs. Claude Code authorizes as a SIMD client. I logged in through Keycloak. The server minted a real ES256 token, and the scope-gated tools answered according to my roles. A client I did not write, identifying itself with nothing but a URL, ran the whole flow. None of this is a complaint about Anthropic. A published document and a runtime template disagree by one hostname form, the RFC sides with the server, and there's a documented way through. It's what early adoption of a draft actually looks like. The standard works. The fleet hasn't caught up yet, and the gap is smaller than it sounds. Where this breaks, the rough edges, in the order they'd bother me. There's no trust policy, and that's the biggest gap between this demo and production. Every syntactically valid document from an allowed address is accepted. Deciding which client URLs you honor, through an allow list or domain pinning or something with a human in it, is the piece you'd have to build, and it's the piece that turns anyone can start a flow into a decision you made rather than one you inherited. The MCP inspector sits in the same category as the Claude Code mismatch, one notch further back. It still obtains its identity via DCR, so against a SIMD-only server it can complete discovery and then has nowhere to go. Code block omitted. The spec says should, this server implements the should, and the protocol's own reference client still speaks the may. Claude Code is one hostname form away. The inspector hasn't started. SIMD is an IETF draft, not an RFC. The MCP 2025-11-25 spec normatively references draft IETFO auth client ID metadata document 00. The working group draft has since moved to -02 dated 2026 to 07 to 06 and is still active. You're building on a moving target, and I'd rather say that than imply stability that isn't there. Per client consent is still missing, exactly as it was in the DCR repo. Every SIMD client rides the same federated Keycloak consent, so the confused deputy problem the MCP spec names applies here unchanged. A shared upstream client with no per client prompt is the first thing I'd fix before this went anywhere real. The demo also relaxes things a production server must not. The SIMD draft requires HTTPS client IDs, so the local stack turns on the library's loopback exception to serve its document over plain HTTP, and the SSR RefGuard allows loopback back in under the default demo profile. Any other profile restores the strict filter, and both shortcuts are marked demo only where they live. Then the small one that will bite someone. The metadata URL is the client ID, so if you change WEB port in support / env, you've changed the client's identity and have to edit client JSON to match. SIMD is the should. DCR is still the answer for most people today. If you're deciding between them right now, the honest read is that this isn't a migration you're behind on. SIMD is where the spec points, and it's genuinely simpler once it's running. No registration and point, no client table, no onboarding call. But the installed base is uneven in a way the spec text doesn't prepare you for. Anthropic's document resolved cleanly and then tripped on a hostname form, needing two environment variables to complete a flow, and the reference inspector can't start at all because it still registers. A server that speaks only SIMD will turn away clients your users actually have. So the DCR proxy from the June post isn't obsolete, and I'd still reach for it in front of an IDP that can't register clients. What changed is that the seam I left open there is a working reference now instead of a paragraph of intent, and I know exactly where it phrased. The piece I'd think hardest about isn't the code. SIMD quietly moves a dependency. Your login path now runs through a URL somebody else operates, on their uptime and their schedule. That's a fine trade, and it is a trade, which is not how the specs should makes it sound. This is the fifth surface in the Spring Boot and OAuth 2 guide. After the DCR proxy, the HTTP edge and token exchange with Spring Cloud Gateway, and the messaging path in Rabbit MQ over a MQP 0.9.1. The source is Spring OAuth 2 MCP SIMD. Clone it, run MSI run demo, and open an issue if something is unclear or broken. Standards and sources. Plain English notes on each spec, and how it maps to the code, live in the repo's docs/standards-md. MCP Authorization Specification, 2025-11-25, OAuth Client ID Metadata Document SIMD, IETF Draft RFC 7591, OAuth 2.0 Dynamic Client Registration, RFC 7592, OAuth 2.0 Dynamic Client Registration Management, RFC 8252. OAuth 2.0 for Native App Section 7.3. OAuth 2.0 RFC 9728. OAuth 2.0 Protected Resource Metadata, RFC 9700. Best Current Practice for OAuth 2.0 Security.